Emery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
I think feminism is the worst thing that ever happened to women. Now, I may or may not agree with that statement, but that actually wasn't my quote, Timmery. That's comedian Ali Wong on her new Netflix special, Baby Cobra.
Yeah, it's really interesting because this actually was taped last year, so there was a lot of conversation about it when it was first taped. But now that it's available on Netflix, it's been really interesting to hear the response to some of the things that she has had to say about women, homemaking, husband hunting, as we could say.
Yeah, that's a good term for it.
Well, and what's funny, Don, is that there's always truth to most statements that people make. So when she's up there acting as a comedian and using stories and examples, people find humor out of things they find challenging or real life experiences. So these are some of the experiences that she's sharing.
Yeah, there is, to be good comedy, there has to be a little bit of truth in there.
Right.
You have to be able to connect with it somehow. So Ali Wong, as you may know, is one of the hotter comedians on the circuit today. And interestingly, she did this bit 7 months pregnant, if
yes.
I'm not mistaken. And let me just say a few things. We don't have the audio for you, but let me give you a couple of quotes from her routine, and then we'll break this down, because I think this is quite revelatory about the nature of feminism. And just to be clear, this is not some conservative Christian comedian. This is not appearing at a church. She is a foul mouth. I think she would call herself a progressive, out there lady comedian.
Let's just say it's not something I would recommend watching. It's raunchy. I myself wouldn't watch it. Again, reading commentary is kind of one of those things where people have just kind of been aghast, offended, and also have appreciated what Ali Wong has had to say.
Yeah, that's right. We're not recommending you go watch this Netflix special. It is raunchy. But here's some of the things she talks about. She says, to find a husband, for example, you have to make him believe your body is a secret garden, when in fact it is a public park that has hosted reggae fests. And what she's talking about there is her promiscuity as a young woman has led to a few issues now that she is in a relationship where she wants to get married and have a child and settle down and have a family. She's finding that and she's very open about it. She has had sex with a lot of people over the years and was very free and I think easy is probably the right term for it.
And I think, I don't know if this is true, but I've read in a number of sources that she actually talks about having had sex with homeless men and how she's now even contracted a sexually transmitted disease. And even in some of the conversation about her current pregnancy, they've basically implied that she needed intervention, implying some form of IVF that led to her now pregnancy, showing that, you know, this woman, truly a young woman still in her early 30s, who is now having her first child, has talked about how she says she popped Plan B like Skittles. She had sexually transmitted diseases. That weighs down on the woman's body after a period of time, often causing infertility, among other very serious health issues.
Yeah, I think she's quite clear about this, that it was the high intake of pills like Plan B that have now left her unable to naturally have a child. So they have technologically done. I don't think she is clear about what exactly the steps they took. But so many different aspects of this. So just to be clear, so we have a woman in her 30s wanting to have a baby but struggling, wanting to get married but struggling to find a man and keep that man. And she's very clear that that's what I'm after. I'm out there trying to get a man to stay with me. And to do that, I have had to do various things, including pack his lunch every day for several years and she makes a joke about it, obviously, but she's like, I'm trying to make myself indispensable in his life. So I do things like pack his lunch.
She wants that faithfulness, that commitment, that longevity.
And I just think what has happened to our culture is so epitomized by this comedian, that you have a young woman, a very clear victim of the sexual revolution. And there's a great new book out, actually. I was just reading this. It's interesting. I read this at the same time that I was reading this new book by Mark Ordinaris called Cheap Sex. And Mark is a sociologist at the University of Texas, has done a lot of work over the years in the area of the sexual lives of not only teenagers, but now young adults. He did this huge, huge study on the sexual lives of what we would call millennials. Mm-hmm. And fascinating, fascinating reading. I highly encourage you to get this book. We're going to probably talk to Mark here, hopefully fairly soon. So what happened, he lays it out as a transaction. He says, how do we get to this era of cheap sex? He says, well, first you have to understand that women are the ones who control when men and women have sex. It's really all in the women's hands.
Hey, now that's putting a lot of pressure and responsibility just on the woman for chastity, which is actually already an issue in our culture.
Well, okay, but I don't know if it's pressure so much as he would say worth. Like
responsibility.
Well, women are the ones who have the greatest value. He says if you look at it as a transaction, like when you offer sex, you're getting something in return. Like historically, there's been it's always a transaction. Even today, it's a transaction. It just happens to be very, very cheap, that men are basically getting zero in return, and women are getting zero in return for offering sex. But in the past, that was not the case. And he points to two things, the pill and porn. That's just two main things that have caused sex to become so cheap. But historically, traditionally, a woman, if you go to a woman and want sex from her, what she hears is, oh, you want to support me, settle down with me, have my children, marry me, spend the rest of my your life with me. That's what you're asking when you say, I want to have sex with you. Because if I get pregnant, that's what needs to happen. So I am going to hold out. This is traditionally, this is not today, I get it, but traditionally, a woman says, I'm going to hold out having sex because I'm not interested in getting pregnant with someone who is not reliable, who cannot support me, who does not love me, who does not think that I'm valuable, all of those things. You as a man have to have all of those attributes, and you have to be willing to commit your entire future, all of your money, all of that to me in order to have sex with me. That's the transaction.
And you add on to that, even in the circumstances where, say, women and men didn't hold out to have sex until that circumstance was allowed, what would happen is people get pregnant. They have, jokingly, what are considered shotgun weddings. This responsibility of, I got her pregnant, I'm taking responsibility for my sexual actions that have led to a baby and a woman who is pregnant.
That's right. Well, that's right. And the same transaction would apply there. You're just saying, all right, we're going to gamble. We're going to roll the dice here a little bit. But if it comes up baby, that's what is assumed.
Yeah.
It's assumed that I'm going to marry you and we're going to spend the rest of my life. Now, what happens then is women get to be very selective about who they have sex with. And you wait until you have the right man. And here's the thing, what that does for men, it encourages them to be that kind of person, right? Because men want to have sex. I'm just going to throw this out there, okay?
It's just how men are wired.
Man, it's true. Like, just look at the data. Men want to have sex. They want to have it a lot more than women. This is just a fact.
They think about it way more than women ever do.
They think about it all the time. And so, historically, traditionally, that setup where women hold out until you're the kind of guy that I want to be the father of my children, unless you're that kind of guy, I'm not going to have sex with you. It helps men become that kind of guy. Yeah. That's the whole point, okay? And so I need to grow up. I need to get a job. I need to be mature. I need to be willing to commit to you because ultimately sex is that big of a driver. That's
right.
Not the only thing, but that's the thing. Here's what happened with contraception. You take the baby out of that whole thing and you get people like Helen Gurley Brown saying, you know what? You need to go out there and just have sex for the sake of having sex, young lady. That's what you need to do.
You changed the natural consequences, which then changed the way we perceive the responsibility we had within sexual interaction. And that's huge because most situations, you can't just remove a consequence. You have a health problem. There's a consequence. You take certain medications. There's a health consequence. I talk to you in a certain way. There is going to be a consequence for how I speak to you. How is it that with the most fundamental part of who we are, our sexuality, that somehow we were able to abolish the consequences literally, and now they've played out in other ways, but it's changed how we relate.
It's changed the entire economy of sex.
Right.
Because now women don't have to hold out for that kind of guy. They can have sex with whoever they want. Indeed, many women prefer, look at the stats that are laid out in this book, many women prefer actually having sex with people they know they're not going to commit to. I just want a physical relationship with you. Those people that they think might be fathers of their children, and that's a whole different ballgame, they're not going to jump into bed with those guys the first night because they want that guy to be of a higher character. Unfortunately, because the economy of sex has changed so much, there are fewer and fewer guys out there who are of that character. But you know why they're not of that character? They don't need to be.
They're not challenged to be.
They've got a bunch of women out there who are willing to have sex with them without any commitment, without being good character, without wanting to be the kind of guy who would be a father for my children. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the ratio of good guys has plummeted.
And this is no excuse. It's just speaking to the fact that our media has exposed men and women to such an extent that it is hard to live in a way that is consistent with our sexuality being chased. When you see these images, pornography, video, most even stories on television enter around sexuality in some way, and then you have women who just don't care, it poses incredible challenges.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending
with Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
So, Dawn, recently I attended a lot of weddings this year, a lot of weddings, a lot of baby showers. And it was interesting because one of my friends married a man that she had dated early on in our early college years, maybe even early on through high school a little bit as well. They had been together for a long period of time. And it's interesting because 5 or 6 years later, they ended up getting back in contact and ended up getting married with time, and they're expecting their first baby. But what was so interesting in celebrating with everyone and being around the celebration, it was funny because I actually haven't seen him since back in the day when, I mean, essentially many of us had this adolescence, a lot of growing up to do. And it was really interesting because one of our friends said, I can't believe you haven't seen him in such a long time. I said, I know people change and, you know, I trust, you know, my dear friend's going to make a responsible decision, looking specifically for things such as, is this a man who will be a faithful husband, who will be faithful, truly giving himself totally to me, permanently, and open to that fruitfulness of marriage. I knew that was what she was looking for and wouldn't settle for less. And so in my mind, I know that this change has taken place. But what's unfortunate is many people have this attitude that people don't change. And part of, I think, in our culture right now, Dawn, is that we don't encourage each other to change. Like you were talking about in the last segment, you know, men don't have to have this higher expectation of themselves with regard to their sexuality and responsibility because women are just willing to settle for whatever.
That is exactly right. And again, this is not to blame the woman. It is to show the value of a woman. And so if you're just joining us, we're talking about this article about a progressive comedian who is taking aim at feminism. Ali Wong, in her new Netflix special, spends a lot of time talking about her relationship struggles and her desire to get married and settle down, even after a long career, if you will,
right,
of having promiscuous sex and living that lifestyle.
And with the consequences of having a hard time getting pregnant, sexually transmitted diseases.
All of that. Now, she's also, this is what's interesting, she spends a lot of time in this special talking about how she has tried to create a need of her on her hopefully husband's behalf. This is interesting. Like, I need him to feel dependent on me, to need me, to want me in some way. And I'm having a hard time with that, right? She's like, I'm making him lunch. You got to try to figure out some way that you're needed. And I think that's a nice, explicit way, sad, but explicit, of actually the problem that women are having. That and you just talked about it, Timory, in giving yourself sexually to men, what you are doing is not only making yourself unneeded for all of the other stuff, but you're making a whole bunch of other women unneeded. That the mating market, we talked about this before the break, the mating market is skewed when a bunch of women go out and are willing to have sex with men without grabbing the commitment and without being willing to, like, you need to be a type of guy who'd be the father of my kids. If you're not willing for that, you skew it for everybody else.
Well, and what's happening is you're giving them what they need on a strictly material, desire, animalistic level. You're not giving them who you need. And this right. is what's at the core of this conversation. We need who we need. And even in her effort to pack the lunches and make herself truly indispensable, what's happening here is instead of going, I love you and I want to help nourish you so that you can take care of yourself, it's almost this idea, you need me. This is, it kind of turns it into being about her, right? About the woman rather than about the other person in many ways, because she wants that security. So you see that, unfortunately, where there's a lot of good entering into this, and I think the practice is good, we still have to purify really the intention, what's happening. But unfortunately, we've fallen so off to the left of what is right, you know, that there's become an issue.
Yeah, well, I think women need to understand that men aren't going to see beyond the sex if they don't need to. And like, I know you're trying, I know, you know, you're speaking nicely about us as men, Timory, and all the rest of it. No, we are creatures who will fall to the lowest common denominator if that's an option. And I just think we've seen that historically, that men, if free sex, if cheap sex is available, they're going to take it, and they're not going to worry about it. They're not, women have what men want, but when you give them the sex up front, men don't, they're not that worried about the family and all of that and being mature and providing for you. We've talked about several instances. I think of the young girl, I think it was the New York Times or something, she wrote about how she's got 1,100 people waiting to meet with her. All she wants is one guy to settle down with her. She cannot find it. That's because there is enough women who are willing to swipe right or left or whatever.
Right, on these apps.
On these apps.
And you know what? I'm going to put a plug for anyone who didn't hear that episode. They need to go back to the archive, because it really is a timeless episode on, I think it was titled Dating. It came out in August or the end of July, but I think August.
Yeah.
A really important episode.
No, it is. This is another illustration of it. The cheap sex mindset, where you as a woman, here, your value, I mean, you're immensely valuable. You're the key. I just want to point this out. You're the key to the whole thing, to the human race. When you give up your fertility, you are degrading yourself. You're degrading men. You're allowing them. It's not you degrading them, but you're allowing them to be degraded. And here's what happens. I'm going to use a phrase that I stole from Dr. Benjamin Weicker. You're actually, as a woman, you're making yourself obsolete. This is his term, and I think here's was his phrase. He's like, what the pill did was actually make the pill obsolete, and then it made women obsolete. And here's what, you don't actually need the pill anymore, because you can get enough porn and self-gratification out there now, virtual porn, that you almost don't need women. We've seen this in Japan.
Right.
It's pointing that direction, right? The sex bots are replacing traditionally the woman. Why? Because the woman, in having a contraceptive mindset, to a man's mind, you're basic, and I'm sorry we're getting crass here, but this is so important. The difference between the live woman and the sex bot, it's not that different when you're on the pill. I just want to, just like, you're a machine for a man to have an orgasm.
Have degraded your body to such a level. Even within marriage, when you were on the pill, you were saying, you can have my body, enjoy only in the pleasure of it, but separate yourselves from the two fundamental things that the church holds holds to when it comes to sexuality and married love, and that is that every sexual act is meant to be unitive for the good of the spouses. You enter into hormonal contraception, any type of barrier method, condoms. I'm sorry, especially in the Catholic Church. I know we have a lot of people still using them. But you're saying, no, there's this barrier between you, both on a physical level, an emotional, spiritual level that enters in. Not only that, we are called to be one, unitive, and two, procreative. When we're not open to life, and that doesn't mean that every time you have sex, you're going to have a kid. That means if you're not open to it, you're not open to the love and sharing that pushes the two of you to go further and how you are loving and expressing that love for one another and another person. Otherwise, you're just on an island in this honeymoon phase where it's you and him and that's all that matters.
Yeah, but it's not all that matters.
Right? Yeah.
So again, I feel so bad for this comedian, Miss Wong. She wants so badly, and you know why she wants so badly to have a kid and settle down and have a good man? Because that's who women are. I mean, that is who you are. It's okay. Like, it's all right to want to just have a kid. We've got more stories about this later in the show or maybe next show.
Still on this, though, something that kind of stood out to me when I was thinking about this. I was at Mass yesterday, and it was during the Epiclesis, and the Epiclesis just before the transubstantiation. And the Latin rite is when the Holy Spirit is called upon to come down on the gifts of bread and wine before they're transformed into the body and blood of Christ. And I was thinking about how marriage and how every sacrament has the epiclesis in it, the calling and pouring forth of the Holy Spirit. And so I pulled up in the catechism where it talks about the epiclesis in marriage. And this actually, relevant to what we're talking about, really stood out to me. It talks about how in the various liturgies, and I'm reading from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, the section on the celebration of marriage around 1621 to 25. And what it talks about is how in the liturgy, we're calling for prayer and blessing and the epiclesis, the pouring down of the Holy Spirit and asking God's grace. And then it says, blessing on the new couple, especially the bride. And I had actually never noticed that in the catechism when it's talking about the epiclesis and the blessing of the couple and the sacrament of matrimony. And I've been thinking about it since yesterday. Why is it that this blessing is especially poured down upon the bride? And I think that this conversation is so relevant to see that, yes, men and women both have a sense of responsibility, but women in the beauty of the soul and the morality of the woman, not the exterior beauty, is meant to draw men into something so much more. And that exterior beauty, in part, is what takes them to that deeper morality and love and spirituality.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, you have, and again, it's not a guilt thing, and I don't even know if it's a responsibility. It's an immense value that women have. You have this huge gift that God has given you, that it's sort of up to you to draw men to be better than we're naturally. Like, we are kind of just, you know, sort of nasty, but women have the ability and the power to draw us to something more. And when you give that up, when you just sort of like, no, I don't want that value. I don't want the life-giving unit, all that. I'm just going to, not only do you get a raw deal, but all of the men around you end up getting a raw deal.
They don't live to the fullest potential they have.
That's right. And so, women, please, you have the power.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. Studios of Immaculate Heart Radio. You're listening to Trending. Trending. With Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Don, this truly insanity, and I keep hearing it referred to as a gender insanity topic, continues to go on, and it's something that I think especially listeners continuing to understand and know some of the facts and stories behind it, they're telling in and of themselves. You know, I think of Walt Heyer, who transitioned into being a woman and then transitioned back into being a man after, you know, surgical procedures and hormone replacement therapy. But here's another story, Dawn. A young boy, 12 years old, was diagnosed with gender dysphoria. And he ultimately ended up transitioning into becoming a girl, receiving estrogen hormonal therapy, growing breasts as a result of this, having his own body truly mutilated to look as if he were a girl, and, you know, began basically playing and enjoying time as a little girl now. Well, guess what? 2 years later, he's changed his mind.
Yeah, shocker. That's a shocker. That what does it even mean that he, again, to have gender dysphoria? Here's the quote from the boy's mother. Well, when he was young, he would dress up in girls' clothes. At one stage, he did say to me, could he be taken to the doctor to be made a girl? And so they did. I mean, what are you doing as a parent? This is ridiculous. The kid is, what, 8, 10 at that point then? And you're taking him, they had to have probably started earlier than 10,
on,
right?
Right.
And so now he's 12, and he's like,
now. He made the transition
14.
At 12, yeah.
And he says, I began to realize, I was actually comfortable in my body. Every day, I just felt better. The teen recognized that his gender confusion began to dissipate when his school teacher started referring to him as female. He looked me in the eye and said, I'm just not sure that I'm a girl, said his mother.
Well, no surprise. Your son, you started to put through hormonal replacement prepubescently. This child had not even gone through puberty. His hormones weren't even acting and behaving as they're meant to do in the body. That being said, your very DNA is programmed to be understood as male or female. You can manipulate, you can change, you can move the body as you may, but you are still male or female, except in those very rare cases, which do indeed unfortunately happen, and again, they are rare, where there is absolute ambiguity, where even, you know, there might be ambiguity in the genitalia. Well, then they check the chromosomes. And there, usually you have chromosomal knowledge of whether you're male or female, and your insides match it. But then at that point, there are very rare exceptions where even that's ambiguous.
I just, what does it even mean to be a parent anymore? Like, who lets their kid decide anything? I'm just like, okay, right? They're kids. They're crazy. Yes, let them decide if they want peanut butter and jelly or something else. Okay, to a point, right? I don't let my kids decide all day what they get to eat. I don't. I mean, to some degree. But if they were given a choice, my son would eat candy all day long and nothing else. I mean, he loves the sugar. And yet these parents, here's another story out of Arizona that goes for this. Just this week, a couple of days ago, a story talking about how this transgender, and I'm not going to share this age here just for a second, this transgender daughter of hers has now found a school where she's welcome. And it was such a hardship for her because she didn't feel welcome in her previous school. And you think, well, whoa, freshman in college? I mean, what? No. Kindergarten, Timory. My daughter is lucky, says this writer. At 5, she's a new kindergartner and headed back to school like millions of kids. But earlier, when they were in a different school, they had to follow a dress code. And they wanted, I guess it was probably one of those uniform schools, and they wanted the daughter to wear the uniform for the girls. Right. And the parents said, oh, no, she's a boy. 5 years old.
That's the parents at that point.
Of course it is.
And you know what, Dawn, this is what happens when, like in the earlier in the show, we talked about how we've taken babies out of sex. You now have many women and men, but especially women who want children down the road. They end up having to appeal to different forms of in vitro fertilization, you name it. They get that baby or intentionally get pregnant, knocked up, right? So that they can have their child because they want their child. It is now a commodity to be sought after. And not only that, in vitro fertilization, you create many children, right? And you destroy the ones you don't want through abortion often. But here's, like, I'm sitting here thinking, people are practically treating their children like little chihuahuas. And yeah. Sit with me here.
No, I'm with you.
A person has a little male chihuahua, because male dogs are usually a little easier to have, right? Or so I've been told. I don't know.
I'm not going to make any generalizations about that. I'm not an animal person.
But
I've heard that as well.
Okay.
You're right. I think you're right.
So say you have a male dog either way, right? What happens is people have these little cute male chihuahuas. Well, guess what? They dress them up as girls because they want to have the little girl outfits on the little chihuahuas or the purse dogs and all these different elements. But it's really a male dog. Well, your children are not a dog. Your child is not a commodity to be sought after. It's not a thing to be dressed up. It's not a test tube experiment. Your child is a person with the same value that you have.
I actually wonder. I mean, I get the dress up thing, but I actually wonder if you tried to change the gender of your pet. Would not people be upset? Would not? I mean, this is, again, I've stolen a lot of points from Ben Weicker, but this is what he also told me this the other day. He's like, listen, would people impose Obergefell versus Hodges on a group of chimpanzees? I'm just saying. Just check that out if you're not familiar with the reference. But we would not. Of course, you would not go into a chimpanzee community and say, oh, well, you used to be male, but you're female now. Or you're No, right? We treat animals almost better than we treat our kids. Listen, as I'm looking at this story, I almost feel like we need to do a little more research, because it was written by the child's father, who happens to be the president of the Arizona Trans Youth and Parent Organization. And I just wonder. Makes me wonder. That did you become that after you decided that your 4-year-old was trans, or is there something else going on behind the scenes where I'm going to throw that out. I don't know. Right. I don't know.
This is child abuse. And you know what? You as a grown adult make the decisions you want to make with your consent. Do not put this on a prepubescent, underage child. And I think that this is what's fundamental. And like, just adding some ridiculous humor to this in some ways. Are you ever offended, or were you offended when you were in school and you were called a freshman, Dom? Because this is something apparently you should be offended over now, especially
a fresh person,
right? Different schools now, some including Emory University, that I actually think changed this years ago, but now Yale, now insists on referring to first years rather than freshmen. That way it's more
I'm surprised it took them so long. I'll be honest, I'm surprised it took them so long. I mean, we've gotten rid of the term man out of everything else since. You know who's good on this, though, Timory, is actually Camille Paglia, who is no one's, conservative Christian fire breather.
Right.
But she is very clear that, listen, you people are getting a little crazy with your... She even calls it child abuse, I think, some of the
She things. Does. She's called it... And you know what? Don't get me wrong, or anyone... I love Camille Paglia. She's actually one of those people I could read and read and listen to. She's so intelligent. She's also completely disagrees with us on most things, from morality to you name it. But she actually has a strong sense of objectivity. You know, she's a self-proclaimed feminist scholar, and also she's identified as a lesbian. She refers to herself this way. But you're reading her work, Dawn, and you see such truth, and you see agreement. Like, she upholds often, even though she has a child with, her partner, that being said, she still advocates for the natural family, male and female. She advocates for children needing a male and female influence. I think she even talks about how her own father, a male family member, has influenced her son that needed that. But Dawn, I think people, when you read her, you've got to see the truth and then see, oh, you just dropped off the cliff there. You went in the wrong direction.
Right.
But here you see where she's able to objectively see, for example, with regard to transgenderism, that it is absolute child abuse. And she says at one point, ultimately, every single cell in the human body, the DNA in that cell, remains coded for your biological birth sex.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Camille Paglia is she's very pro-science.
Yes.
Right? And so she talks about, listen, reproductive biology is clear that there are only two sexes. This is just what you were talking about.
Yeah.
The science is not ambiguous on this. There is the minute number of cases where you've got some issues. We get that. The genetic abnormalities, we understand. But the science is clear that biologically we have two sexes. She's like, to deny that to a child below the age of consent, and What is that becoming now? We've got issues coming up on that down the societal stream here. But to deny the science below the age of consent is clearly child abuse. And I think it's nice coming from someone who's, you know, not, this is not religion talking. This is just objectivity.
This is objectivity. Not only that, this is extreme, profound scholarly work. This woman did her dissertation in androgyny. This woman herself talks about having experienced gender dysphoria essentially when she was little. This woman comes from the community of the LGBT community, which in fact has rejected her because even though she experiences same-sex attraction, she's an advocate at times for the natural family.
Yeah, I mean, she's it's interesting. She's advocates, for example, for abortion, even though she's clear that, well, it is murder.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
So there is, like, here's the science, and it's clear there's two sexes, and I make certain choices in my life. I'm paraphrasing. This seems to be her approach. I make certain choices in my life that you may disagree with, and we certainly do, but at least she doesn't deny the reality of the science underneath it. Yes, that's a person. Yes, I think it's okay to kill it, for example. So, yeah, read Camille Paglia. Interesting stuff.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending with Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Some of you may remember this topic covered on Hearts and Minds, in fact, back last year when there was a priest that was kidnapped in Yemen. Back, I believe, in March of last year. Yeah, March 4th, 2016. It's been almost a year and a half. And this priest is a Indian Salesian father, Father Tom Uzan Lalil. And he has been held captive this last year and a half. And Don, it was interesting because at certain points, it was actually believed that he had been murdered. And so to find out over the course of this last year that he was indeed alive, some videos had come out showing that he was well, being treated decently well considering, but he was seized by state militants, Islamic militants, and now he's been released after a tremendous amount of diplomacy and working to release him. But man, I have to come back to this, and this is why I wanted to cover it. Praise God that this priest was released. And imagine the offering up of suffering that he went through during that year. But we also, I think, so often aren't thinking about our Christian Catholic brothers and sisters. For example, when he was kidnapped, four of the missionaries of charity and 12 others were murdered in that attack that he was pulled from.
Yeah, it's true. And I plead guilty to this as well. You don't pay as much attention to stuff that's happening on the other side of the globe.
Right.
But I'll tell you, it is nice in the Catholic Church. I'm not saying that evangelicals don't do this. I come from a strong missionary background, and so we did sort of keep up a little bit on the world. But Catholics, the Catholic community, the Catholic Church is seen as a one big family. And, you know, you go anywhere in the world and you're going to know what kind of, you know, the mass is a little bit different, but you know what you're going to get. And it's so nice. It really is our brothers and sisters. And I appreciate it. I liked the little few paragraphs in the story about the diplomacy. We don't know all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, right? And I just think, you know, as I've studied a bit of history, how often throughout history this has happened where the Vatican has all had all these back channels and doing all this stuff that nobody ever hears about until decades later sometimes to try to help not only the priests, but I think you'll find as you dig into this, they're very concerned about the ministry that the priest is doing and what can we do to make sure that the local Catholics are having access to the Eucharist. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. So pretty cool. Pretty neat that
praise God he's safe.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And good Lord, you know, continuing to pray for these people. And so I wanted to make sure we shared that incredible praise report and update. In the meantime, kind of wrapping up the show here, more on sexuality. There was this really interesting piece put up talking about at the AmericanConservative.com, actually. You had sent this over, Don. And this reader essentially ended up writing into the website talking about her son and herself for having allowed him to do so, got married at 19 years.
What? What?
Only 19.
This is, on one hand, I love the story. On one hand, it's sad. So here's what happened. This woman emailed telling her story about her son that got married at 19. Now, just full disclosure, my wife happened to get married when she was 19 as well. And let me assure you that this woman's concerns are accurate. People look, well, probably you're listening to this think, oh, what? People are...
She got married to you, right?
Yeah.
The way you said correct. That, I'm just going, you're
good
setting
clarification.
Yourself up there.
Good clarification. Yes, to me. We got married when she was 19. And, you know, this wouldn't have raised any eyebrows 50 years ago. But today, this is a huge shock to people. What this woman goes on to say is not only was that a huge shock, but what wasn't a shock, she goes on to make a distinction, what wasn't a shock is all of the other kids of the other families around that I know who just, they don't get married, but they're clearly either living together or having premarital sex or living in a moral relationship, but at least they're off going to college and
no
they're,
one's
they're
balking
focusing
at that.
On their career. And, oh, that's no problem. Of course. I mean, go ahead and be promiscuous, but why would you get married when you're 19? Oh no, that's terrible. And I think, oh man, this is so clear and so insightful that are we more concerned as parents, as Catholics, as a culture, right, with our kids going out and making money, even if they're living lifestyles that the church teaches is mortal sin, by the way,
right,
we're more concerned that they go make money while living in mortal sin than that they might go get married when they're 19. What a travesty.
Well, and this is a slap of a reminder. Are we more concerned about our material needs than our spiritual needs? And you just said it perfectly. Lifestyles that are living in mortal sin. And you know what? When we have habitual habits that continue to fester and live in on us, and when we don't come back into the church, that has eternal consequences, you guys. And I think that this is where the fact that someone's making a big deal about a 19-year-old getting married, and actually, we didn't even mention, this is within a Christian community. She's saying it at her church.
Yeah, this is
people are getting, and she said, I think it's ironic, too, that these same people that are criticizing my son and his wife are the same people who are celebrating marriages of other people who are getting married for the second, third, fourth, and fifth time.
Yep.
And so I think that it's so interesting that for some reason there's always this question surrounding pregnancy or surrounding young marriage. Are you sure you want to get pregnant? Are you sure you want to get married? No. Is it, are you sure you want to kill your child?
Right.
Are you sure you want to make a commitment that is not going to be lifelong and permanent and leave you possibly open to truly horrific sexually transmitted diseases?
Rod Dreher, who is the author of this piece, he makes a connection with another societal trend, and I think it's a good one. And he points out that some parents, we talk about the concern that we have for teenagers, for example, on their cell phones and always in front of a screen and porn and all this stuff. Yet parents are very reticent to pull that cell phone away from their child. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, because the child would feel socially ostracized. And I would add, and I don't know if Dreher makes this connection, but I would add the parents then would feel socially ostracized because their kids would be looked at as weird. And if my kid is looked at as weird, I'm looked at as weird. And I wonder if this doesn't play into this whole marriage thing. I don't want to be looked at as a parent who raises kids who get married when they're 19. I mean, oh, what, right? And Dreher is the guy who wrote The Benedict Option, by the way, who says that, listen, if you're going to be salt and light in the world, you actually need to be salty and you need to be light in the darkness. You can't be conforming to everything around you. And this is to me, that's a decent point. Like, how much of our, I'm going to send my kid to be just like all their other kids at his public school with his cell phone, all the rest of it, having promiscuous sex, getting to all this stuff. They're going to do all that stuff because that's what society... Don't you want them to be different? No, they got to go out there and be salt and light. You know what? You're not being salt and light if you're like everybody else.
Right.
And so I think it's a decent point. Like, how much as parents, how much are we wanting our kids to be like everybody else and in fact damaging them in the process rather than take the social ostracization and say, you know what, we are, we're going to be different. We're, we're going to be a little different. The kid's not getting a phone, or we're not, it's okay for the kid to get, I mean, so many things here.
Well, and I think that that's really interesting, especially because a conversation I just had this last week. So I know a lot of people love the movie and the story of The Great Gatsby. I've not read it and I've not seen actually a full thing. I tried to watch one of the older versions of it. But I put on the first couple minutes and I'm like, man, this whole story is about one couple after another cheating on each other. It's total promiscuity. I just turned it off maybe 10 minutes into it. And I say that because I have tried, and again, not always perfectly, none of us are, but to be really careful with what I watch. If the story centers around divorce and remarriage and adulterous relationships, I don't need to watch that. Truly, there are better things that I can do. And so when it comes to spending time with people and the movies they want to watch, and again, I think there's always a level of, you know, being prudent but not prudish, you know, I think there's a balance. But I was thinking about this and how really it's one of those moments where you're actually stepping back in a small way, really, though, from the current culture, and how hard that can be because people make fun of you or call you prudish when you're just trying to be like, I don't want to watch a sex scene in a movie.
Yeah, right.
You know, or whatever it might
just
be.
Just mention to people that, well, I don't really watch Game of Thrones. What?
Right.
Oh, Game of Thrones is the best thing ever. Really? Because kind of looks like porn to me. And I know people are going to be upset that I just said that.
Right.
Oh, but we got to be, how much of it is actually good and how much of it is you just wanting to be cool and be able to chat about? I'm just saying. I feel like a lot of the Christian movie reviewers out there, they have all these positive reviews about just junk films. How much of it is I want to be accepted by the wider culture and not be seen as prudish, not be seen as... I think, to me, there's a lot of that going on.
And I think that, again, it's a good reminder that there are things, small sacrifices, even that not only can we choose to separate ourselves from, but we can choose to offer up. And I think that, you know, this idea, and we've talked about this a lot, especially with you having come into the Catholic faith, you'll talk about how this idea of offering it up in Catholicism, what is that? But for me, one thing, you know, I've actually really struggled with food, and we've talked about that before. And for me, I've had to learn, you know, because of my food allergies and autoimmune disease, there's a lot I can't have. And I could just go through not having it, being super strict. But there actually can be times I'm really craving something. I can offer that up for an intention. Same thing with this. Not watching something, not using your cell phone at a certain time, that can become prayerful.
I think it's a great point that we need to offer up more and more of our lives. And indeed, as the culture becomes increasingly dark, I suspect we're going to have to do that. We're going to have to make those decisions. Am I going to be salt and light, or am I just going to go along to get along and be thought of as cool in the culture? And the distinction is becoming clearer and clearer each and every day. Who is willing to offer it up and sacrifice and be salt and light, and who isn't?
This has been Trending with Don and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Trending.
To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.